All right, hands in. On three. One, two, three.
Mama, we made it.
All right. That was it. First time. I feel like it was good.
I liked it.
Yeah.
The synchronization was there, yeah.
Yeah. We didn't even... That wasn't really rehearsed. I guess we did do one beforehand.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. How's everyone doing today?
Doing good, yeah.
Hell yeah. Good. We got Johnny here. Johnny's a good friend. Johnny, have you been practicing your drums?
No.
A little bit.
I'm doing the thing.
The paradiddle?
Yeah, the paradiddle. I did that. Yeah, I've been doing that a bit.
Yeah, you could literally do that anywhere.
Yeah. That's the only thing I've really
So the context here, Johnny wanted to teach herself how to play drums, and I played drums, so started giving her a lesson, you know, and you did freaking badass.
Thank you.
You're able to do the whole thing, like, no big.
Now.
And didn't you say that you're trying to teach yourself guitar too?
I am, yeah. I'm a lot more. Far along on guitar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And did you teach yourself? Like, what was the thing that made you want to?
Well, I started learning it when I was younger because my brother was playing it.
Okay.
And I thought it was cool. And also, I was like super into the Beatles and rock and roll and stuff. So I really wanted to do it. I took a class in 8th grade.
Oh, okay.
And then I kind of stopped doing it, but I'm picking it back up.
Didn't you take a class too?
So you're about to be
at Valley View. I took the class at Valley View, actually.
You took that class.
Did you take that class?
Oh, wait. What's her name?
With Mrs. Nordahl?
Yeah. It's funny. I still see her at the gym sometimes.
Really?
She has her guitar on her. See, I love that. I love when people.
Mrs. Nordahl.
Just.
Sweet lady.
They want to learn something, and they just kind of like, you know what? I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
I feel like you, because you came to me, you like literally were like, oh, I want to learn how to play drums. Jesse, can you teach me?
Yeah.
I love when people do that, because it's like, it's taken. It's putting your action or your thoughts into action, and you're doing things for yourself, you know, like you're making yourself a better person, which I feel like, I don't know. I talk to people and they think that they're stuck in like their current, you know, being.
Right.
But they don't realize like literally anything that you want to achieve, you just have to try. You have to do.
Yeah.
But the thought has to be there first.
That's kind of the open-mindedness thing right there. The belief that you could do something else, because people are so closed off to like, oh, these are my skills, and learning anything new, that's not me.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
I think there's also, like, a big fear of change, too.
Yeah. That is huge.
And, like, in the instability of possibly, like, having a big change in your life. I know, like, musically, there's all of these prodigies, like, the Beatles, for example, started when they were super young, you know? And so, like, you think that, oh, I'm at this certain age, it's too late for me.
Yeah, it's too late.
This, you know?
Too late to do anything.
Yeah.
That is super true.
But so many people get old and they have all these regrets, and it's like, what? I'm not going to do that. Like, what is the point of doing that to myself?
Definitely. Yeah. And like, since they went through that, now we never will have to. Because you realize, like, you learn from the things that you don't want to do.
Yeah.
Like, when you see that in other people. But I feel like the reason is, like, it creates this anxiety of, ooh, I have to take action, or, ooh, what if I'm not going to be good? Mm-hmm. There's all these different things, and, like, it just kind of... That kind of festers, and it creates like self-doubt, all these different like little rain off kind of what is the right word, moods and emotions that kind of send you down a bad path. But I know that you kind of went through some of that like through your life. I hope you don't mind me asking, but
no, it's okay.
But like what kind of was your thing? What was the thing that helped you get out of it, or what got you in it?
All right. Well, this is it's a loaded question.
It's a loaded question.
A lot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think I've had anxiety for pretty much my entire life, like, since I was a child.
Okay.
And, you know, it could go back to my parents' divorce. We could go into my whole, like, you know, therapy sort of rundown. But, I think a lot of it probably stems from my parents' divorce, and then, like, I've sort of attributed it to not really belonging to myself in a lot of ways, because I would, you know, I'd go to dad's house, I belong to dad. I went to mom's house, I belong to mom. I went to my grandma's house, I belong to grandma. I went to Krista's house, I belong to Krista.
Right.
You know, and while that was, actually Krista was probably the safest and most comfortable space to be, but I didn't have like a comfortability in like really like owning who I was and like what I wanted, and a lot of times what I wanted was to be loud and kind of obnoxious maybe and be right. artistic, creative in so many different ways, but I often felt very silenced. So I think
that... So these surroundings, these different people, you were belonging to them, you couldn't really be yourself.
Yeah.
You had to be what they wanted you to be, kind
of
thing.
Yeah, and everybody had their own different kind of beliefs and ways of life. So my mom has always been a major hippie. Like, she raised me like Wiccan and was like really, really like into plant medicine and whatnot and all this stuff that I've actually like totally returned to. But she was really into that. My dad was a lot more conventional. He had grown up Christian. He didn't raise me religious at all, but he was very, he didn't believe in things that he couldn't see, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Or that he couldn't prove. He was just a lot more traditional.
That's such polar.
Yeah, right? I know. And then my grandma is, like, super Christian and really crazy.
Right.
And then, like, Krista I always got along with a lot better, and Carol, my aunt.
Yeah.
We always were a lot more on the same wavelength, but definitely Krista has always been more,
Welcoming?
Well, no, welcoming for sure, but she's also, she and I are super different in that she's a lot more, like, maybe analytically minded, or maybe not analytically. I think
she definitely has that analytical side.
Yeah, and I think I do too, honestly. But she's more, what is it? I guess just, she's really good with money, you know?
Yeah.
She's really good with money.
I would say fiscal, but she's like, that's not a thing. Like, don't use that. It just means money. But yeah, no,
she's really goal-oriented.
Yeah, yeah, and she's always just really had her shit together. Like, since we were kids. Like, she, when we were like, I think she was, like, 8 years old, and, like, what she really wanted for Christmas was a cash register.
Dude, she told me about this.
Yeah. Like, it's, like, she's always been that sort of person. Very organized. She's been saving her money since she was really young.
Right.
She's always known what she was going to do. Very just, like, straightforward, you know?
Yeah.
And I've always been a lot crazier. She was always really clean. She would, like, we would joke that she was my mom because she would, like, do my laundry and stuff like that.
She loves it.
And I would be, like, we'd go to my house, and it would just be, like, like piles of laundry just like all over the place. Like, I was always like way less organized, like very artsy fartsy.
I feel like that creates creativity though. Like, because I definitely was not the cleanest person, and my mom is like super clean.
Yeah.
But I kind of had this way more creative side than some of my other family members. And like, you could see the quality change. It's kind of the same with Krista. Like, she's like, she's creative in her own sense, but like, she is like very, she's a doer.
Yeah.
You know, like, but I really dig that.
Totally. It's
so
awesome.
Cool to
it's
see those different personalities.
It's a really cool thing to be. I think like growing up, I had all of these mixed signals and these mixed ideas of what was okay to be and what was not. And I would be something different basically in every space that I was, like, to cater to what everyone else was, like, what the vibe there was, you know?
Yeah.
And that was really rough. And tying back to, like, your, like, maybe your space, how you keep your space, if you're clean, if you're not, I've always heard that your space can reflect your mental state a lot of
Definitely.
The time.
I've heard that too.
It's like nature versus nurture, right? Like, your environment.
I think it's just kind of, like, what comes up. Like, if your head is all over the place and you're not focused, you're stressed,
your
you're having a hard time, your room is totally gonna be a mess, because that's just I don't know,
that
it's a reflection
true.
Of your mental state, I think.
That
and then
true.
Krista has always really had her shit together, so her space is always very nice, you know. It smells nice. She's got like really high quality bed sheets, and
diffusers.
You know, she's always got that down, and
very
like,
true.
And it's you know, I've always been different. And I think a lot of that does come from being kind of like spread all over the place. And I had two rooms growing up, you know, so like it was having to keep up with those two things and moving things back and forth. And I've always been sort of a bag lady, because I'm always afraid that I'm going to be like, it's like I used to leave my homework at my dad's house sometimes, and it's like, oh shit, I can't turn in my homework on time because I'm not going to see my dad for another 2 days or whatever, you know?
Right.
So I've always had that sort of anxiety in me that like, I'm not going to be prepared. I'm not going to have what I need.
So you have two of everything.
basically.
Twice the load.
Yeah. And now I just like, now that I'm just like on my own, I just have so much crap. Like, I've had to downsize so much.
Ah, but,
because
spots.
I've had the two spaces. Yeah. But, But I think that's, yeah, as a child, that was, like, something that was big for me. And I, they diagnosed me with asthma when I was, like, 11, I think.
AD? Asthma or no, asthma?
Asthma. Oh, like, okay. Breathing, like, asthma.
Okay, sorry.
Because I used to just, I would, like, suddenly just, I couldn't breathe. But I grew out of it pretty quickly. And apparently, like, my mom told me I used to, like, take the inhaler, and it just would, like, hype me up a lot, and I would, like, freak out and then, like, pass out. But, like,
they were just drugging you.
Basically. But I think, like, reflecting on that, I think really what was happening was I was having panic attacks. I don't think it was asthma. I don't think I've ever really had trouble with that. It was panic attacks. And I've had that, most of my life. Like, there are moments where things just get very overwhelming and I can't quite handle it, or even sometimes it just comes out of left field and I just, like, I can't breathe.
So just randomly,
you know? Yeah And my head is just like, oh my gosh, I'm running like 1,000 miles a minute. Like, in my head I've got all these crazy thoughts going on. Sometimes my body just feels paralyzed. It's kind of manifested as different things throughout my life, but like, realizing that the asthma as a kid, am I saying it weird?
No.
Okay.
I'm a drummer. I can't hear it all. So right. I'm partially deaf.
But the asthma thing has been, was an interesting way to kind of frame that, to see that, like, everybody knew that I had an issue, but they couldn't quite figure it out. But, like, asthma was what they came to because I couldn't breathe.
That was just the only symptom that they saw.
And I asked my mom about that recently. I was like, did you ever think that maybe it was something else? And she was like, yeah, I did. But back then, like, they just didn't think that kids had asthma.
Dude, yeah.
Or, I mean, had anxiety. Yeah. They just didn't think that kids had anxiety.
It's weird. We almost, like, think of children as, like, no, they're not the same. Like, they're
right.
You're a kid. You don't see things the same.
Yeah.
But they have the same exact emotions, you know, than with adult. If anything, they probably have a more sensitive feeling of emotion. I know I went through that too as a kid.
Yeah.
Like, I went through a serious depression because I loved so much, and when people were not reciprocating that, I took it like as like a, like, what is going on? Like, I didn't think people were mean. I never, luckily. I was very thankful that I never had to see a lot of that until I was in sixth grade or something.
Yeah.
And it took me through a depression, but going through it, it definitely formed a lot of the way that I think now. But go on with what you're saying. I'm sorry. I totally cut
you off. No, that's okay. I don't remember really my train, but you're right. Like, totally. I think children are,
they didn't think that,
they didn't think the kids had anxiety. And I think that's crazy, especially because this was like, maybe like 2000 or something, you know, it really wasn't that long ago.
Right.
Like, maybe even like later than that. Sorry, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was watching this video today, and it was talking about the general anxiety disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, like, I think it was 4, like, main criteria that were someone that has that, that has general anxiety disorder. They call it GAD, or is it GADS?
Yeah, I've heard GAD? It just called GAD before, yeah.
And, in order for, like, a doctor to diagnose an adult, they had to have at least three of the four,
mm-hmm.
but children only needed to have one. In order to diagnose them and then prescribe them anxiety drugs.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting.
That is.
They didn't even, like, I think they didn't even take that into account.
They just skipped that box.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, well, like, the issue seems that she's not breathing right, okay, so it's probably asthma.
They're treating the symptom. It's a trippy thing. Like, you don't think that they would do more tests.
If you come into the doctor's office, like, this is my problem, you know? They're like, oh, let me ask you all about that problem, opposed to, you know, doctor's appointments are like 10 minutes, you know?
Right.
That's like the average, like, nowadays.
That is true.
And so they're just gonna, you know, whatever your, like, complaint is, they're gonna address that into as much detail as they need to.
Right.
But not, like, the whole, like, picture.
Yeah.
You know? Like, well, what else could be going on with this person? Let's ask them about their life.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I think also, like, my uncle had asthma as a kid, and, like, really bad, and he was, like, a trained EMT, and so, like, anytime something would go wrong with me, my mom would call him, basically. And so, like, he would, I remember him being there a lot when I was, like, dealing with all of this. And so I imagine he probably was, like, seeing it through his lens, you know? Yeah. He was like, I had asthma as a kid. We're related. Maybe that's a, maybe it's a genetic thing or whatever. And he could recognize his own symptoms in it, so he probably just kind of projected that, you know? So, you know, I don't blame them. It's like a...
They knew what they knew.
It's a rough thing. They knew what they knew, yeah, you know? But yeah, so I think basically I've had, you know, anxiety misdiagnosed for, like, my entire life.
And when did you realize that it was anxiety? Like, oh, wow, this is just anxiety.
Chris, my ex-boyfriend, right, that I was with for, like, 6 years, mm-hmm, we started dating when I was, like, 18. And I was... They say, you know, like, your physiology changes, like, so many times in your life or whatever. And like 18, like the age 18 is like really specific. I don't know if it's physiology, but I don't know. I heard this the other day. But when you're, yes, when you're 18, there's like a big change like emotionally. And then when you're 25, there's a big change emotionally. And so, at 18, I feel like things were really like flaring up. And maybe that was also just, you know, graduating high school, going into college, you know, kind of having to be thrust into like adulthood. But I was having anxiety attacks a lot at that point, or panic attacks, I guess, and it would be the breathing, but it would also just be like rapid fire, just like thoughts of like how awful I was, and
like negative kind of self-talk.
Yeah, 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 but it'd be like rapid fire, like I couldn't slow myself down, I couldn't see it any other way. I also have had like a lot of hang-ups with my body. Especially like growing up, in LA, I think has been like, interesting just because of how like looks conscious LA is.
Yeah. Very aesthetic, yeah, focused.
Yeah. And being kind of like a pasty white, slightly chunky girl, like among all of these like tan blonde surfer chicks, you know, yeah, it was always kind of rough.
And then social media, we were in the age of social media when, yeah, all this stuff is being perpetuated.
Right.
And but even sponsorships, that, yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. It is, you know, even if it's not being talked about, like, mm-hmm, people are, you could see it.
Yeah. Well, and that, I mean, I could go on a whole other tangent. I just did like, yeah, my whole thesis project for my undergrad was all about that. It was about like body dysmorphia.
Right.
But my mom had really bad issues with her body. She was bulimic in high school and like has always struggled with her weight, like going up and down. And she always told me, she was very open about how much she hated her body. And so I think it was something
like
that I
took
up, on.
She,
yeah,
she would tell you even when you were young. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So it was something I would internalize as well. She used to tell me to like suck in my stomach, you know, stuff like
my
that.
My mom says the same thing to me.
Yeah, right.
She says that to me all the time, yeah.
It's super weird, but it like, you know, it's stuff that kind of sticks with you. And so like once I got older, I was 18 and like, you know, my body's kind of like evening out at some point. I started gaining a little bit of weight and like, and so that plus like being thrust into adulthood and being in a new relationship and just all of this stuff, it really hit ahead. And it was all stuff I'd been feeling for a long time, but I was really having a hard time. So I was talking to Chris one time, and Chris he grew up in a more like kind of conscious space, I guess. His mom was like, was very similar to my mom in how like hippie dippy she was,
right,
but he only had her. So he like,
so it was just that.
So he really has that mindset. He's really all about like staying as positive as possible. We both grew up in this like hippie church sort of deal where it's like, the whole thing is like you create your own reality. Your mindset creates what your reality is.
That's cool. That doesn't even sound hippy dippy. That sounds like just a logical.
No, it's true. It is. It's based off of a science. You know, it's like it's a philosophy more than it is like a religion.
Yeah.
But I think actually that like, and I could get to it later, maybe it has been really helpful in like framing how I see things now and how I've kind of coped with things. But
right. When did you get into the hippie? What it's called, hippie church?
No, it's called so the philosophy that they study is called science of mind. And yeah, like, do you know about The Secret? Have you ever heard of The
yeah.
Secret? Yeah. So it's like, it's similar to The Secret. It's The Secret is basically just saying like you Yeah, your mind creates your reality.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's
whatever
you believe will manifest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As long as you really believe it, you believe that you deserve it, you know, all of that stuff.
I mean, they study that so much. Like, imagery is that.
Oh, yeah.
It's there's small micro parts, but there's also lifelong imagery, and that's totally a thing. But I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely a thing. And when I was a kid, I thought, like, okay, well, this is some religion, whatever, and everyone around me was Christian, so it's kind of weird to talk about. But as like, now that I'm an adult, I totally am like, oh, no, this is just science. Like, I'm not weird about talking about this at all.
Yeah, just because it was a gathering kind of thing, it just sounds to the...
Cult-y.
Yeah, cult-y. Exactly.
Yeah.
But Chris, you know, grew up in that. We both grew up in it. I started when I was like 11, and he, I think, maybe around the same age. And his mom really immersed him in it, and he got really involved in like the youth leadership. They had like camps and stuff like that. So he was a lot more immersed in it than I was, because I had it there on the back burner, but I still had my dad and my grandma and Krista and like all other like other sorts of like life philosophies coming at me too. So I didn't fully get into it, but he did, and that was really beneficial to him and like, and brought him up in a lot of really good ways. He felt pretty confident that he was limitless at, like, you know, a young age. I mean, I think that's awesome. Yeah. we're born that way, and then we kind of lose
never
it.
Heard of this.
Oh, science, yeah. Well, there's science, like the main book they use is called The Science of Mind by Ernest Holmes. I would recommend looking
that
it up.
Name
it's
sounds
rad.
Very familiar.
That's yeah.
Familiar. What is his background, Ernest Holmes?
Honestly, I don't know.
He's
I think
psychology.
I think he's a psychology. Dude, I don't know.
Sounds
but
good,
he it was from a long time ago, like early 1900s.
Okay.
So, yeah. He was like, he was friends with like, or he was kind of going along the lines of like Thoreau. You know Thoreau? Like the road less walked or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, the road less traveled.
Yeah, so whatever, yeah. But like, it came out of like transcendentalism.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so, you know, I was 18 and I was starting to have all these like really out of control, like anxiety sort of symptoms. And Chris, like having grown up in this more like conscious sort of, life, was like, hey, you know, I've heard about this thing, anxiety, and I think that you have it.
That is totally how he talks. That's exactly how he talks.
And he was like, or I was like, oh my God, like this is amazing. There's like a word for it. And I think I love labels to a degree, just because it's helpful to like to know like, okay, there's a word for this thing that I'm feeling,
totally.
Which
yeah,
means
totally.
Like maybe it's something I can look up, maybe I can find
something
out
something other people are experiencing too. It's been documented. It's a thing.
Yeah, totally. So he was like, I think you have anxiety, and I was like, oh my God, I totally have anxiety, you know. And I was reading up on it and stuff, and then so I went and saw a doctor, and I started seeing a therapist pretty regularly. I started, I started taking Zoloft when I was 18, which is it's an SSRI, and I think it's for depression too, but it's,
right.
But it has, you know, been shown to be really good for anxiety as well. And I've also had depression, you know, kind of on and
I feel
off.
Like they're kind of correlated almost.
Totally. They totally go hand in hand. Yeah.
It's just those intense emotions that are hard to control.
It's almost just the opposite of it. It's like anxiety is too much in your like your body, and then depression is almost like emptiness. And at least
maybe.
Yeah. When I was a kid, that was like the type of depression. I'm sure it happens in different ways, but there's this like, you don't even feel sad, you just feel empty. You feel like there's nothing in you. You feel like you're watching yourself. That was something that I had to go through.
Mm.
But with anxiety, when I felt anxiety as well, like it's still negative. It's more emotionally negative rather than depression is like a physiological emptiness. I don't know. Like and with that emptiness comes negative thoughts, of course.
Yeah.
But it definitely it hits in two complete polar different ways in for me at least. I don't know.
Well, I don't know what the actual like physiological response like for depression is, but I know I read one time that anxiety is like an overactive amygdala, I guess. So
which is your fear.
Yeah. So like fear and stress hormones, you know, that are like you're constantly in like fight or flight, you know. Yeah. And so there is physiological, you know, aspects to the anxiety. That's why you know, you can't breathe or you're shaky or shiver, you know, like I would get really just like really worked up, you know, when I'm depressed, like then I'm sleeping for days or something like that. And yeah, I feel that sort of emptiness. It's like there's no point. Like I'm just going to sleep for as long as I can. But the anxiety, it's like, oh my gosh, I have so much energy running through my veins, but not in a productive way. You know, yeah, like how lovely to use this this energy to be creative, but no, I'm using it to hate myself instead, you know, or be afraid that I could die at any second or something, you know. Actually, like there's this quote, I don't know who did it originally, but Chris told me this one time. Oops, sorry.
No problem.
He told me that anxiety is just excitement without the breath. And I love that quote.
Yeah.
And I think it's a little cheesy. Like, there are a lot of circles that use it a lot.
Anxiety is excitement without the breath?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I think that's really true. And that's something I've come to embrace as I've gotten older is, like, you...
Yeah, when I already said that, I'm like...
Yeah, right? Well, because you get into anxiety and, like...
You stop breathing.
Yeah. You totally stop. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so much of it, at least for me, is held right here, like in my chest, you know? Like, and you feel that really tight stuff right there, and you can get really, like, locked up right here, and all of your energy just lives right the fuck here. And, like, what you need is to, like, spread it out.
Yes.
And, like, in order to, like, get that going, you gotta start breathing. And if you can, like, breathe in and out slowly, you can literally, like, slow down your heart. Like, that was another thing I would always have, like my heart would just beat really, really fast.
Pattern.
Yeah, and I feel like I was gonna die, you know, like I'm like having a heart attack or whatever. Yeah, but you can breathe and you can slow that down, and it gives you a second it makes you realize that you've got a second to change your thinking, you know, like when you're in anxiety, at least for me, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's no time. Like I have so many things I need to do. I'm wasting my life away, blah, 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 whatever I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And it's like, I have to do action right now. I have to change things right now. And I think in a way anxiety for me has been a good motivator because like it's pushed me. Yeah. It's pushed me to do things that I know that I need to do. Not in a great way,
mm-hmm.
but crap, I forget where I was going with this.
Definitely. It can be like a healthy stressor though, for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. But
it's just an excess. That's when you get the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're like, you have anxiety about giving a speech or something.
Mm-hmm.
You give the speech, normal people would be like, oh, it's over. I feel great now.
Mm-hmm.
But some people with this general anxiety disorder, they still feel that anxiety even after the speech is over.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what's the problem here?
Right. Well, because maybe you're thinking like, oh, I'm worried about what everybody thought about me. Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
I totally messed up that one moment. Like everybody noticed and they're just going to think about that forever. They're never going to forget it.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Yeah.
This is what they're going to view me as. Oh,
yeah.
God, I ruined
exactly.
everything.
Yeah, you think of, like, these tiny things. And I think that bleeds a little bit into, like, social anxiety, which I think is covered in, like, in general anxiety disorder. But I've also, like, struggled with social anxiety as well, for sure.
What is the other one? Like, there's social, and then just by yourself you'll start... feeling.
Well, there's just general anxiety disorder, which is just like you have anxiety about a lot of things, and it's kind of hard to pinpoint what exactly gives you anxiety. But then there's social anxiety where talking to people in one way or another is very difficult.
It's like kind of like introvert style
I guess
people, because they're not always they say that they're not people person. You know, they're not a people person. You know,
yeah.
Silence.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's like the extreme introvert. I feel like everyone has like a little bit of both, you know?
Definitely.
Everyone, it's just moments.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're not ever just one thing.
Yeah,
you know,
and I think it's also about your energy. Like, if your energy levels are high, then like you've got a lot of space for that social energy.
Yeah.
If they're
prepared.
Low, then you don't. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because there's this general anxiety disorder that kind of like covers everything, but then there's social anxiety, which most people say are like, you know, it's hard to give a speech or something. You would definitely have a hard time giving a speech. That public speaking is super scary.
Yeah.
I actually watched this TED Talk. I don't remember the person who gave it. I'll have to find it and
yeah,
send it to
it.
You or something. But this person struggled with anxiety, but what they found was that they were really good at public speaking and performing. They did improv and stuff like that, and that was like where they found comfort in life. But then one-on-one with people, they would like freeze up. Like, it was really hard.
I know people like them, like actors. Actors don't like to talk to people, but if they're on stage, they're fine.
Yeah. I can be like that a lot of the time. Like, I think I can, like, I did performing all throughout high school and stuff. And that was, like, a way that I kind of had a voice when, like, times when I didn't feel like I could have a voice. But then, like, talking to people one-on-one was kind of hard. And at this point, I think I'm pretty good at talking to people one-on-one. It just kind of depends on how, like, open they are to me.
How open? Yeah, because you start self-doubting yourself. You're like, oh, I can't be myself. It's almost how you were saying when you were growing up with your mom, you had to be with your mom's, you know, or your dad's, you were with you're for your dad, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I think it depends on how much you feel like you need to perform for somebody, you know. If you're one-on-one with somebody that you don't feel very comfortable with, then you may feel like you need to put on a face for that. I think really what's helped me so much has been embracing who I am and just being who I am no matter what. In every situation, I'm not different. I'm not, like, putting on a different face for someone or another. I'm just, this is my level. Yeah, this is me, whatever.
Like it or leave it.
And I think it takes work to get there. But I think that's also where what has helped so much with anxiety as well. I think my anxiety was largely about having to perform, like, having people expecting things of me, not being what they were expecting me to be, and being pretty different from a lot of my family too. So, like, when it comes to the body part, like the body aspect of it all, you know, my mom's side is Mexican, and so they're darker, they're bigger. My other side of the family, they're all very petite, very light skinned.
Right.
And I've got the light skinned part, but I've always been a little like bigger, like my Mexican family. Right. So I don't quite fit in on either side.
Yeah.
I've always been sort of a black sheep.
Yeah, that's true. Then
like, I'm also an artist. and you know, the Abramsons, you know, Krista's family, they are all very
analytical,
very financially driven, not very artistic. And then the other side, actually, like, my mom's side, most of them didn't go to college. They work in the medical field largely, but, like, a lot of them didn't really go to college. It's just, like, a whole different.
Yeah, right. Like, different mentality, different thoughts. But you were not either. And that creates its own self-doubt, too. Like, being an innovator is never fun.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, no one's ever been here before. Or at least not that you know of, at least.
Right.
And you feel on your own. You have to be... like, I don't fit in any of these things.
Yeah.
I'm either all of them or my own separate thing.
Yeah, and how do I explain this to people and have them actually, like, respect me for it?
Yeah, because it goes back to, are they open to hear that you are not like everyone? You know? People want to label people.
Yeah.
And so it's funny, when you were saying, like, I like labels, it brings comfort to know that you are this.
Yeah.
You know, but life is so uneasy in that aspect because... Yeah. We don't know. We always thought our parents had the answers.
Right.
But
yeah.
They're the same. They're the same.
Totally.
That's when you know you grew up. You're like, oh, so everyone feels this way. Like, this sucks.
Oh my
but
God.
It's also really good. It's also really good.
No, I think labels are really good, but I think that also labels are need to be flexible. Yeah.
Definitely.
You need to be able to be flexible with how...
There's a gray zone to everything.
Yourself. Absolutely. Everything is a gray zone. Absolutely. Yes. No, I totally agree with that. So I guess chronologically, you know, I started going to therapy and taking medication.
What age was this at?
18.
18. Okay. Yeah. So it was right when you first found out about anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah. So I started going to therapy like every week. This therapist, she was okay. Like, now I look back and, you know, she wasn't great, but she was a good starter. And then, I was on medication, took Zoloft. They had me on Klonopin every day, which now I look back, not good. It's like an emergency anxiety drug, basically. So you take it when you're having an anxiety attack and it brings you down. Like, you know, it like calms down your heart. People take Klonopin recreationally, because it totally gets you high.
Okay.
But they were having me take it every day. And so I, like, developed
a... Multiple times per day? Because it's, like, a fast-acting drug,
just once
right?
a day. But he just had me... My doctor just had me taking it at night. So, like, I'd take it before bed, and it was just supposed to, like... To manage things, I guess, but, like...
Do you feel
like
that worked at all? No. Did you still have anxiety during the day, probably, yeah?
Yeah. No, I always had anxiety during the day. Oh, and then it would make me really tired in the morning. It was hard to wake up in the morning, because I'd still be, like, kind of zonked from it. And I started, like, building a tolerance to it, like, pretty quickly. So, like, I would need more, and, like, it could have, you know, that could have been bad, you know?
Yeah,
wow. Totally. But this doctor, I don't know, he was nice enough, but I wasn't really feeling it. I don't think
being nice
right.
is,
yeah,
you
not
know?
Always enough.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem right at all.
And I was doing this all through Kaiser, and they're kind of questionable with their mental health care. They, like, it was, like, they contracted me out to somebody. So I was, like, I don't know if this is right. I think my mom said, like, oh, you shouldn't be taking Klonopin every day.
That is super sketch.
Yeah, right? And so, like, so I was able to get a new doctor through Kaiser that was, like, in Kaiser, like, in-house. So, like, so then... She shifted things. I think I was on Wellbutrin for a while, which is, like, more depression-based, but it's, like, I don't know what it is.
Another
SSRI? Like, it is, I think, an SSRI, or maybe it's an MAOI. I don't know. They both, like, they affect different, they target different.
Do you know what those acronyms mean?
Yeah, SSRI is a, some...
Selective
serotonin
reuptake inhibitor.
Yes, thank you.
There we go. We have our encyclopedia right here.
Great. I'm glad you knew it.
Okay.
And then I don't remember what MAOI is. It's just a different, like, chemical.
Makeup.
I think.
Yeah.
But
they work by, like, a similar mechanism, just different, like, receptors.
Right. Yeah. They're just they're working.
They block
to, like,
different things and
right
allow reuptake of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. So.
So you stopped taking Klonopin?
Klonopin, yes.
Yeah,
Klonopin, yeah. No, I stopped taking it. And then instead they gave me Ativan, which is the same thing pretty much, but it's, which is also basically the same thing as Xanax. I feel like everybody knows what Xanax is, but, like, there are these other ones that are pretty much the same thing.
Right.
But yeah, so they gave me Ativan, which is actually, like, that's what they give you, like, if they're trying to sedate you in a hospital.
Right, because that's
like
a sleepy one too, right? Like,
yeah.
How did you take that before bed?
Yeah. Well, this one actually, they just had me taking it if I needed it. Which was so much better. So it's like, I'm about to, like, you know, I'm panicking. My heart is beating really fast. I can feel it coming on. Okay, so I'll take an Ativan and that'll, like, calm me down. But that's, they also gave me this other thing called propranolol. It's a, I believe it's a beta blocker. So it's, like, it's actually for.
I've tried one of
them. Yeah.
That's another story.
So it's for, like, heart health, you know, right? So
it stops your heart from beating fast.
Okay, yeah. Like, so it's for, like,
your heart literally can't beat fast.
Okay. Yeah. Right. So yeah, it's for blood pressure, but they give it to people sometimes for anxiety. And so they gave that to me. And so it was basically like, okay, so you're taking, like, Zoloft or Wellbutrin, whichever one I was on at the time. You're taking that every day. And then if you're having anxiety, take a propranolol. If you're still having anxiety, you take another propranolol.
Wow.
If that really can't help you, then you take an Ativan and you're just knocked out for a while, basically. Yeah,
that
is
insane, that process. They don't do anything where they teach you, oh, let's get your breath under control.
Well, and that's where the therapy, that's what your therapist is supposed to be doing with you, basically.
Because
there's, like, the psychiatrist, you go to the psychiatrist and they're just like, what drugs can we give
you to help you out?
And then there's a therapist who's, like, supposed to kind of go over those sorts of methods with you and then talk out your childhood and blah, 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 all of that stuff, you know? But that's what sucks because there's, like, there is funding enough for you to go see a psychiatrist, but there's not often a lot of funding for you to be able to go to see a therapist. My insurance will totally cover me seeing a psychiatrist, but will not cover me seeing a therapist. And the therapist is, like, a long-term...
It's an investment.
You know,
you have to take time. And
yeah, but it's, I think
it's like, the root cause of what your problem is.
Exactly.
Instead of just, you know,
treating
the symptoms.
You see
that's so much
now. Like, we've been... I think it's due to money, to be honest. Because it's just, like, you get the most bang for your buck by... You know, getting this drug. Oh, they can't feel those symptoms, but little do they know that you're still suffering with all of this horrible emotions that, you know, inhibit your life.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And so, you know, people will, you know, they'll be on these medications and they'll think like, oh, wow, I'm feeling so good. I'm doing so well. Because they're literally like fucking with your physiology. I'm sorry if I'm, should I not be cussing?
No.
Okay.
Cuss away. Fuck yeah. Do your thing.
Cool. you know, they are, people feel good because their physiology is being altered by these drugs. But it's so common for people to be like, oh man, I feel so good. I don't need these anymore. And they'll go off and then they plummet, you know, because that's all that was keeping them up. Because the problem is still there, yeah. Exactly.
There's a dependency now. I want that emotion, but I don't want to work for it.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of people probably would be open to working on it, but there's a lot of stigma around therapy. You know, it makes people seem weak. You know,
like you're not perfect. Handle your own shit. You should be able to do it yourself. Yeah. Like you're still doing it yourself. You're just like, if you go to a personal trainer, you don't know everything about how to work out, you know, you can still get big. You can still do it.
Back to the open-mindedness, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I think that's also, it's kind of a societal thing, you know, like, there's sort of, it's kind of inherent to like toxic masculinity and just like being masculine in general. Like it's, you know, it's weak. It's kind of feminine to like talk about your feelings.
Yeah.
And
even females, like masculinity, like it transfers over.
Absolutely.
They just like, what, you know, you should be, wow, you're messed up.
Right.
It's like,
well, and you know, if we admit like as women, you know, if we admit like we're having these problems, well then we're super high maintenance and like, and you know, we're not worth the help that we need. And it's really, really outrageous just like how far back a lot of this stems and like how literally systemic it all. Yeah, exactly. But in my experience, the thing that has helped me the most has been therapy. That like, I don't think I could be where I am at all without therapy. I've been on all these drugs, but being able to talk things out and because a lot of times with my anxiety, I get into these loops in my head of like, oh, I'm terrible because of this and this and this.
It's and like an echo chamber in your own brain.
Yeah, and so I'm talking to myself about all of this stuff and it like is bouncing around and I don't have another voice, or at the time, like I didn't really have another voice that was countering any of that stuff. So bringing in a therapist can help you kind of bring in a new like compassionate voice for yourself to like start changing the way that you're talking to yourself in your own head. And that could be through breaking down like traumas that have happened in your life, you know, talking about like traumas from being like a child, or even just
growing up,
just through life, but also, you know, just having them say like, oh, well, you realize, you know, this thought that's reverberating in your head, it's really not that big of a deal. And like, let's, you know, let me help you figure out that it's not that big of a deal. Let me help you see that, you know,
it's like the, so what kind of thing, like, so what?
And then also, you know, doing exercises, I did so many different exercises in therapy and like, there were so many different like suggestions of what I could do. I mean, that's when I took up yoga more hardcore, like once I was going to therapy, because I think my therapist at the time was a yoga instructor, so she was a little biased.
It really helps. Come to this studio, she gives you a card.
Right.
First week free.
but that was very helpful. What I learned from her was so this was, you know, fast forward a bit. I moved up to Oakland to go to school, and my friend had died like literally a month or two right before I moved. And it was really intense. It was really violent. He was killed by cops in Long Beach.
I think I know this story. This is he did mushrooms, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
my friend was friends with him too. But really? Okay. I remember like he was heartbroken. It was an awful story.
But it was totally awful. Yeah, that's a traumatic. Whole other thing I could get into for sure.
Yeah.
They did not find psilocybin in his blood.
Really? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But so that all happened, and I moved away, and so it was like two big blows. My friend died, and I was moving away from home for the first time ever, and 6 hours away, you know?
Yeah. 18, all of those emotions.
Well, this, I was like, I was like 21 maybe, but still.
Around that time, though.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so it was intense. It was awful. I was more depressed than I'd ever been. And so, but thankfully, because I had been through the process of getting a therapist before and, like, knowing that, okay, medication helps me and all that stuff, I knew, okay, this is what I gotta do. Like, I can tell that, like, I'm not doing well. I would have really bad anxiety about taking the bus. Like, I didn't have a car up there, and it's super easy to get around on public transportation up there. But I had such anxiety about the bus. I just couldn't do it, and so I would be skipping classes and stuff just because I couldn't do it. And so I was like, all right. You know what to do. You need to, like, get your help this way and that way, you know. And
you acknowledged it. Mm-hmm. So you yeah. identified that, okay, I need to, mm-hmm. something's going on here.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I'd already kind of been through it before. I'd been through anxiety. I'd been through depression. I had had a therapist, like, kind of long-term before I moved. So I was like, I know what I need to do. So I made sure I got a therapist. I started seeing a doctor. And I think at that point, I started taking Zoloft again. I think I don't know why I went off of it. I was kind of dumb at times, and I just would, like, stop taking the medication because I was just like, I don't really need this, or some sort of side effect would come up.
I don't think that's dumb. I think a lot of people think that.
I think a lot of people do, but it's not super safe. So I will say that as, like, a disclaimer.
Stop cold turkey?
Yeah, a lot of times it's not safe to just, like, stop at cold turkey because emotions and also side effects and, you know, chemicals and all of that stuff, depending on, like, how high your dosage is, I think. Yeah. But it's not, yeah, it's just not super safe. And some of them, it'll be, you'll actually have, like, a withdrawal sort of, like, situation afterwards. Some of them you won't. I think I was mostly okay, but I still, like, it would have been better if I had talked to a doctor and kept going through it.
Yeah.
There were just, I don't know, things would tip me off a little bit. But, once I moved to the Bay, I got a new therapist. Unfortunately, through Kaiser, they could only have me see this one therapist, like, once a month. And I was like, I can't do this.
Wow.
So, thankfully, I was able to get a therapist through school.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I did the same thing when I went to school in Colorado.
Yeah.
It's such an amazing thing. I'm so glad that they do that.
That's a wonderful resource on so many college campuses is that they have these like counseling sessions, and a lot of times they give you so many for free or whatever, and you know?
Yeah.
I got 10 sessions for free, and then after that it was $20 a session.
Which is not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all. And so I did that, and this therapist, I totally fell in love with her. She was the perfect fit for me at that point. And so, at the end of the school year, she was going to be transferring to her own private practice. And I followed her there because it felt worth it.
Wow.
And I paid way too much. And it was very stressful how much I had to pay for her out of pocket afterwards.
Right.
But it felt super worth it to me at that point.
You found your person. There's a right fit to everything, you know?
Totally.
And with that, you have to share your raw self, you mm-hmm. know, and you have mm-hmm. to really, it that takes a lot of effort. And if that person you're not vibing with, that's a huge deal. Even if it's just a little bit of, you know, like, I got a weird vibe. I've had a couple of different therapists, and a couple of them, I couldn't be myself. It was weird.
Yeah.
Kind of how you were saying you kind of had to put on a different face mm-hmm. for all these different things. Felt like I wasn't being my true self.
Yeah.
And then some people they really just were like, hey, it's okay. Like, do you?
Yeah, if you feel like you need to put on a mask for a therapist, though, you probably need to find a different therapist.
That's a problem.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
Yeah.
But, like, totally. Like, once you find that right therapist, that right person that you feel really comfortable with, you can be yourself with, you can mm-hmm. really share it all, that's perfect. Because the more open you can be, the more vulnerable you can be, the more crap you can tackle and get through.
You can face it.
Yeah, exactly. And in this case, like, this therapist, she was gentle enough for what I needed at that point, but also challenging me pretty constantly, you know, like, the bus situation, you know, we would talk a lot about, like, well, what is it about the bus that's making you anxious, you know? Can we do to, like, make this more, like, easier for you? How can we make this foolproof? Like, can we agree for you to try this? Blah, 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 whatever, you know? And it was great. It was so helpful to have her. And in that time period, I was kind of off and on on and off medication, with the help of a doctor. But to be totally honest, if we're going to talk about, like, mental health and the physiology of it, a lot of SSRIs can have, like, sexual side effects. And that was something that I was dealing with that was really pissing me off. And honestly, I went off multiple times because of that. Because I was like, I'm young, damn it. You know?
Yeah, this is my
like,
time.
Like, this is stupid. You know, I'm a young, liberated woman. I'm in the Bay Area, damn
yeah.
it. You know?
Bay Area.
Like,
no.
Yeah.
That's a part of people, you know?
Totally.
You can't just put that in the corner.
And that's a real thing. That's something that I don't think that people have talked about enough yet. We don't have a lot of information about it or how to work around that yet.
They wanted to deny it. Abstinence, you know, and that
right?
style thing.
Well, I talked to a doctor one time, and he said, he was like, well, when you're really feeling this bad, you kind of got to choose then, you know, like, what's more important to you, like, feeling better or, like, having good sex? And I'm like, all right, I hear you.
Depends on the weekend.
I would like both. That would be nice.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, so I had to stop seeing that therapist after a little while. I saw her for maybe like 2 years consistently and made like incredible progress. That was like one of the best times
ever.
Able
to ride the bus, like you were able to do all that stuff, get back to it.
And through seeing her, I realized like I needed to switch majors at my school, and that really helped a lot. And it helped, you know, like I was able to reach out to people and make more friends. And she was just able to help me recognize the things that were holding me back, and also then recognize what strengths I had and what I do see in myself, and how to like keep fostering those strengths and keep telling myself like these are strengths, you know, like how can I keep using these and how can I keep moving forward.
Right.
And yeah, that was great. But I had to stop seeing her because she moved to LA, and then she got a teaching job or something like that, or a counseling job at a school or something. So,
okay.
So she just was, like, not doing private practice anymore. But then I just went without a therapist for a little while. I saw somebody at school kind of, like, off and on. But at that point, I was feeling kind of okay. I was like, maybe I can do this. It'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But then I sort of plummeted again once, like, me and my ex, like, our relationship was, like, really going downhill. I realized I really needed that support. So I went to somebody at school again, saw them for a little while. They couldn't keep me on their schedule because it was pretty full.
Right.
And then I tried to see somebody through Kaiser, didn't work out. They like couldn't get me somebody. Actually the worst part, like I got so fed up with all of this, like maybe a year and a half ago now. Because I was really needing a therapist, and like especially with my like body dysmorphia and stuff, it was really plaguing me so hardcore. And I was like, it was almost like, you know, they say that like with OCD, you often will have these thoughts that just like go through your mind and you literally cannot think of anything else. And you are just completely paralyzed by that, like having to repeat actions, like just to satisfy that, just to move forward in your day.
Right.
And so with the body dysmorphia, I was like, I was paralyzed just thinking about my body all day and how like fucked up it was, even though it wasn't, you know. It's just like a totally, like I totally blew it all out of proportion, but in my head, like I just could not stop thinking about it.
It warps it.
And yeah, and then I couldn't get anything else done. It was rough. And ultimately I ended up putting it into my art, and that was really helpful. But I had read that like cognitive behavioral therapy was like the way to do it, like to get rid of that. And that's like part of that is like exposure therapy, basically. So it's like they expose you to your fears, and that helps you work through them.
Yeah. And in like a progressive way, or like full blown face your fear?
Well, I didn't end up getting to do it, honestly. And I'll get to that. But that's what I've heard. It's like it's pretty intense. It's supposed to be like short term. You don't do cognitive behavioral therapy for a long period of time. You just do it for short term, because it's supposed to really help you radically, like pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I had had a few years ago, I had had a doctor who, through Kaiser, who gave me a recommendation for it. And so I was able to go, but I didn't end up going because I was just in a rough patch. And I was like, I don't want this. I can't do this. But at this point, maybe a year and a half ago or something, I was like, this is something that I could really benefit from. And so I talked to my doctor, and I was like, I would really like this. And around the same time, I was actually trying to get off the medication that I had been on.
Okay.
So this medication was called Vilazodone, and it's like a newer, it's a newer SSRI, or it's like, I don't know, some sort of It's maybe not an SSRI. It's something different.
Is it called Vilazodone?
Vilazodone.
Okay.
It's new. It's pretty new. And actually, I looked it up. It, like, targets the same inhibitors as acid does. Or, it, like, it hits the same something or other that acid does.
I thought acid was affected, like, all throughout the brain. It's, like, hard to, like, pinpoint exactly what
it's
doing.
Yeah, like, a lot of brain activity.
I think... Yeah. Okay, yeah, I've heard that, too. But when I read this, it said there's this one specific space that it hits that, like, that maybe it's similar to acid or something.
Yeah.
I don't know, something like that.
I believe that,
yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
And so, this one, though, was supposed to be, you know, it wasn't supposed to have any sexual side effects, but it was kind of hardcore. So, like, I started taking it, and I had the worst stomach issues, like... Shits up the wazoo.
Yeah.
So bad. But then, like, you know, once I got on it, it was like your body kind of had to acclimate to it. Once I got on it, it was fine. And I actually felt pretty good on it for the first, like, you know, little bit of time. And then I took it for, I was on it for maybe 8 months or something. And I was getting more stressed about other things. And it was like the stress was overriding the medication. And I was already at, like, the highest dose. And so I started getting these zaps in my brain. I would, like, be starting to fall asleep, and my head, it would just, like, zap, and, like, and sometimes
that's
I,
weird.
Like, right? And my, like, whole body would, like, twitch, and I'd wake
Whoa,
up,
fuck.
And I couldn't go back to sleep. And it was really fucking intense. It would happen.
Only when you were trying to sleep? Is that when it
Mostly, yeah, mostly. And then I just would have, like, headaches during the day and be super foggy, and, like, it was really, really bad.
Whoa.
And
that is intense.
It was really intense.
The first time that's ever happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd never had that.
It was just
before.
Wow.
First time, yeah. And then so it started happening pretty regularly, and I was like, I would be walking sometimes and it would feel like I was about to faint, but then I wouldn't faint. Like, I would go for, like, a second and then, like, catch myself and be fine. And I never actually fainted, but I, like, there were times where I kind of tripped over myself because
right.
it was, like, I was about to faint and I was standing up, you know?
Right, yeah. Almost like you stood up too fast and, like, that kind of feeling?
No,
or
it wasn't even fuzzy.
Just
it just
like
was, like,
down.
Yeah, it just felt like everything's going down. Like, I'm about to shut down. Like, it was, like, I was, like a TV. Like
the
like,
power
like,
was going
you know,
off.
Or, like, the computer, they ask you, like, are you sure you want to shut down now or something?
Yeah,
you know, it's like
yeah.
you get to that point, and so I'm like, all right, I'm getting ready. But then, like, I would, like, wake up,
you
know?
Get up.
I would never, like, fully fall asleep or pass out. But it was really fucking scary because I would have these zaps, and then I would, like, almost be passing out, and I was like, oh, my God, what the hell is happening? And at first I was like, I didn't really say anything because I was scared. And then I brought it up to Chris at one point because we were in Philadelphia or in New Jersey with his family at one point. And they were super, they are just crazy people. And they were like stressing me out like crazy.
Yeah.
And so I just was having these zaps like crazy. And it was really hot and humid. And I was like having these fainting like spells sort
so
of. And,
was gone.
And I just was, I thought like, oh, it's just like, it's everything around me. But then I got home and it was the same thing. I kept having the same thing. And so I talked to my doctor and he was like, oh yeah, that's normal.
So
he's
the
like,
medication?
Yeah, it happens. Yeah.
Like, you too?
Yeah. Yeah. He, I don't remember what he called it, but he said it was something like serotonin, just like moving real quick through your brain. Like, zzz, like being like, just like transferred through your brain, like super quick. And it just like, you know, be freaky, whatever. but he was like, yeah, that's normal. But you know, I can give you this other medication to counteract it. And so
here's
like,
some
right,
more
fine.
Medication.
Yeah.
Wow,
so he put me on this thing called gabapentin, which is it's an anticonvulsant, I think. I'm pretty sure. It's so like mostly they give it or no, it's for neural pain.
Yeah,
so
for like
yeah.
neuropathy and
stuff. Yeah,
like,
yeah, and they give it to people with like epilepsy too. Actually my mom got it for fibromyalgia one time. She said it didn't help her, but I don't know about that. But
you think it did help her?
It could have. I think she was not open to it.
Yeah. She already shut it down in her brain.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a whole other thing.
I totally know that one.
Yeah.
I know that one hardcore, yeah.
Right. But this stuff helped really well. And he said like, it was like, you know, it's no side effects, super low impact on your body in general, basically. And so I started taking that along with this medication and it helped. I felt better. Like I honestly, when I would take it, I would. Yeah. So that was the thing. Like I had like a little bit of time where I didn't have the zaps really, when I was on it. And this medication, when I would take it, would make me feel high, basically, and, like, really just, like, Well, not the gabapentin high, but, made you feel high,
yeah. Or taking it in conjunction with the
the gabapentin did. The gabapentin
by itself
did.
That made you feel high, right?
Well, I was taking both at the same time, so it could have been in conjunction. I'm not really sure, but I've taken it alone since then, and it's maybe not high. It's like a caffeine jolt, you know. Like I feel more. Yeah, I feel more sociable. I feel like I just feel higher energy in general. Hmm. And so that was really cool, and I was really enjoying it. But then like a week later or something, I was getting the zaps again. And so, I waited a little while and then I was like, no, fuck this. I don't want to deal with this. This really sucks. And at that point I had been,
fuck that zap shit.
Yeah, yeah, right? Like I don't want to die. Like this makes me feel like I'm going to die, you know? Yeah. Like it's awful. And that kind of makes me feel more anxious.
Yeah. It's just like a self-perpetuating yeah. thing. Dude, it's crazy.
So,
it's like a cycle.
Yeah, so I went off of that, and, like, it was, like, a slow process. I had to take some time to get off of it because I was on a high dose. But, and it was a little rough, like, coming off of it, honestly. But the gabapentin.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.